for joining us. We're going to get started in just a minute. Give you a quick heads up. We're either going to do 2 hours or until we run out of questions. That's totally up to you. Calls are starting to come in pretty heavy. There is still plenty of room for questions, but you better jump in quick. It is the Power Hour today. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything you want to talk about, press 1 on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better your odds of getting through. We're going to get started in just a minute here. We're still looking for John, I think. All right, here we go.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. And today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan joining me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, upgrades, modifications, horsepower, torque, electronics, emissions, troubleshooting, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. Bruce, Ethan, welcome back, guys. Oh, John's here with us, too.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, all three of us are here, and thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So I know you guys probably have some things you want to talk about. Bruce, you and I talked a little bit this morning, and you shared that picture with me of the DD15 piston that looked like it exploded.
No, DDEC 5.
Oh, DDEC 5. Okay, DDEC sorry.
5. Yeah, DDEC 5. He had a young man that worked at a truck dealership. Came to him on the side and said, "Ma'am, I can give you great power out of this truck." And the guy said, "Go ahead." And he took the timing from 2 degrees advance to 15 degrees advance, and then he really cranked up the fuel, was putting 700 and some horsepower to the ground on our dyno, but it broke the wrist pin, broke the piston, and broke the liner. He's very, very lucky that the piston stayed in the bore and didn't put the rod through the block. Half the wrist pin came out, half stayed in. So we were able to do an in chassis and save this. And then Ethan put the timing back to 2 degrees where it's supposed to be, and we cut, I think, about 130 horsepower away from the engine. And his report to us is it's quieter, it's smoother, and it pulls better than it ever did. Because everybody wants to think, they're thinking like in the days of the hot rods, you know, when you had a normally aspirated 327 or 440, whatever, you would advance the timing. But once you turbocharge or supercharge an engine, you have to retard the timing when the boost comes on. So this advanced timing in this DDEC 5 Detroit was actually making the engine work against itself. And the pictures are there. Those pictures are also coming out in the magazine articles, too.
Yeah,
so
it's that's pretty
that's
ugly.
The problem. Yeah, that's the problem with so many mechanics find out, and people that aren't mechanics, how to get into an ECM, and they start cranking fuel and advancing timing, and yeah, it feels like it runs better than it did when it was stock, but it's not the proper way to make horsepower.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ethan,
so, nice lesson there.
You want to, Ethan, do you want to elaborate on that with the ECM tuning?
Yeah, and it's not, you know, limited to the Cummins. Everybody's on that gasoline thought for some reason there. But you're better off to leave it alone if you don't know which way you want to go or what you're doing with it there. Because the manufacturers, got to give them credit for a lot of stuff there. They spent a lot of time, you know, in investment running these engines on dynos, trying to figure out the optimal timing. And a lot of times where people are adding, you know, from like the 2 degrees to 15 degrees, that's like the base timing. And then the ECM makes adjustments depending on the outside air temp, the intake air temp, you know, the barometric pressure, and just, you know, overall the sensor readings. So it can change, you know, it takes that 2 degrees number and then it adds, you know, or subtracts from it depending on what it wants to do based on outside conditions.
Got it. So, you know, as these engines and ECMs and all of the components get more complicated, this becomes a bigger issue. You shouldn't be screwing around in there unless you really understand the entire system.
That's correct. And then
all right,
we really see the end results when we put it on the dyno, and you can hear the difference and you can feel the difference when everything's right. Most of these people don't have a dyno. I mean, I worked for years without having a dyno.
Right.
Kevin, we have one other thing to discuss.
Sure.
It's that time of the year again, and the owner operators are calling me wanting to know where we're going snowmobiling.
Where are you going?
They also said, you got to get Kevin and Lisa to come. I said, you know, I think he's holding back because he knows the snowmobile I have for him to ride is very powerful. And maybe he's concerned about having 165 horsepower underneath him.
Bruce, come
on.
You
to come.
That would be the biggest reason I would come.
Sounds like a challenge. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That's why I said it that way.
Yeah, that would be the biggest reason I would come. Who knows?
I've had three owner-operators already request you being at one of them. It'll be the last weekend in February and the last weekend in January and the last weekend in February. And I think one of them is going to be at Fairview, Utah. And we're not sure where the other one's going to be yet.
You know, the last weekend in January, somewhere in Utah, it's a possibility. Although this year, well, we'll see. I'm thinking about taking off this year and heading for warmer climates this winter. So I don't know. Our schedule's just been crazy. And then the fires we had here and the evacuation kind of screwed a lot of stuff up. But we'll see. That's a ways out. Maybe I can plan for it this year.
Okay. All right. I'm ready for questions.
All right. John, anything new you've seen on any of the stuff you and I have been following lately? I've been just swamped with a bunch of other issues.
You've been entertaining me on social media lately, I'll have you know. But
that's what's been keeping me busy.
Yeah, you look like you've been busy with that. I haven't been. We've been swamped in an interesting project here that I can't say a whole lot about. We signed an NDA, but we're using all that equipment that we have in the back. We've got the engine dyno and all of our emissions testing equipment to, we'll be using it to test some additives that a chemical company is making for refineries. So it's not an aftermarket product. It's not a product that you're going to dump in your tank, but something that's going to help reduce NOx levels in B20. So it's an interesting project, and it's kind of had me a little bit busy, and I've been studying more emission studying. So I'm learning a lot of the chemistry of the emissions now and some other things, but I've been kind of knee deep in that for the past few days. I haven't done a whole lot, worked on the other projects since I returned from the show last week, but that's where I am right now.
We have a Dorothy going on a PACCAR right now.
Yeah. Our first manifold we finally completed for the PACCAR. It's a tricky installation. There is no plumbing on the EGR on the PACCAR, so it's all close coupled. So it goes straight from the cooler, which sits high on the right side of the engine, across the front of the engine through the Delta P Venturi, and straight into the manifold. So we took a manifold and did some careful machining of it and welded some pieces into to intercept the EGR flow and put it out the front of the manifold, pointed to the left, and then we close coupled the Dorothy right to it. We built a saddle that we welded to it as well that makes it all one unit. So the Dorothy's kind of integrated with the manifold, and then it returns the cleaned EGR back into the top of the manifold. We built our own little Venturi tube to do that. So that should be running tomorrow. We'll probably have it on the dyno tomorrow sometime, see how it does.
Interesting. Yeah, that's, you know, we're kind of in the same point right here. I've got about three or four different projects going on, but nothing I'm far enough along to talk too much about yet. So this could be one of those days where we just answer a lot of questions.
Sounds good.
All right, let's do that. Let's get started. Let's we'll start off in Utah. John, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today? Looks like I've got an oil sample in front of me. And wow, let me try to get some. Looks like a fourth grader got a hold of a bunch of different colored markers on this one. That's always scary.
Yeah,
it's an ISX. What year?
That's a 16.
Boy, I am baffled. Got Rotella T5, a 10W30, but that, what do you know which API classification this oil is?
You know, I don't, Kevin. I don't have the jugs with me. I don't even have the truck with me. I'm in my other truck, so I'm not positive.
Okay. Hold that thought. We're going to come back right after the break. This is an odd oil sample, but we'll talk about it right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're talking with John in Utah about an oil sample. John, this is one of the most unusual oil samples I've seen, and I'll bet it's going to come down to some sort of an issue with the newer engines and the newer oils. It'd be nice if I knew which API this was.
This isn't one of the modern APIs. I'm looking it up right now. I don't have the actual specification in front of me. That's a semi-synthetic 1030, so that's not one of the new I can't remember the names
not
of them now,
but
it's not it now.
Kevin, what looks bad on the sample?
Okay, so let me just go through the whole sample because I'm confused. Fuel dilution is 0.0. I almost never see that. Soot is 0.3. so the base oil itself from those two perspectives looks excellent. Viscosity is at 13.8, which is pretty high for a 1030, but I don't see any reason why it would be high. The base is almost gone, 1.4 on the base. The oxidation is slightly elevated, but here's where the problem looks bad. The lead is at 206, and we have copper at 22. That's a shot bearing.
Yeah, you've got,
I mean, we've
bearing.
Got
other things.
We've got chromium that went up and iron that jumped up to 61. I know you've got 86,000 miles on this oil, but The problem actually started to show up on the last sample. The viscosity jumped way up on the last sample. The base went way down, and that's when the lead and the iron both showed up. And then this sample, it just all went to hell.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you remember. I think the last time I called on, you know, that last sample, I was also talking with you guys about it. I've got that spinner 2 system on there, the oil bypass system.
Yes.
And I had mentioned to you guys how ever since I put that on there, I put that system on there at 215,000 miles, I think. And the truck before that, that first 215,000 miles, I've had it since it was new. It never used a drop of oil. As soon as I put that system on there, it would start using oil like every 5,000 miles, I'd have to put a gallon in it. And Bruce mentioned, he said, you know, I should take and make sure that it's getting, you know, oil into the spinner and returning it, and then take the centrifuge thing apart and all that. And I did all that, and it's getting oil and it's returning it fine. And it had probably, oh, maybe a quarter of an inch of soot and stuff in it. So I changed that all out this time when I took the sample. And then, like I say, I was just in at the yard the other day and was able to do that. And I just took off thinking, you know, everything's fine and dandy. And now I get this oil sample yesterday that's like, holy smokes, what is going on with that thing?
I think if I were you, I'd be changing the oil.
Okay.
Oh, well,
yeah, I figured absolutely. I would when I get back.
Yeah, you know, I like the spinner as supplemental filtration, but I don't like the spinner for extending drain intervals. I mean, I think you need a true bypass filter if you're going to extend drains.
Okay.
The
All
spinner
right.
is great, so, great on iron and silica and also soot. And that's what we always found. But every time we used it, we used it in conjunction with another bypass oil filter and had phenomenal results.
Yeah.
If you could get that truck here to our shop, I think we should do an engine flush on it.
Hey, guys,
man,
would you
be able to?
I mean,
how
206
many miles are on it?
There's 302 on the engine and about 87 on the soil. With 206
okay.
lead and 22 copper, wouldn't you guys recommend inspecting the bearings?
I got to look at bearings
yes.
on that. Yeah. Well, if you couple that, Kevin, with the oxidation and the base number falling, you're going to see that oil got hot at some point, which is kind of
yeah.
indicative of a bearing failure. So you had a bearing that got
yeah.
red hot somewhere in there.
That's what it sounds like.
I would, yeah, I'd be careful. I'd be careful even driving it.
Wow. All right. Yeah, see, I'm clear over on the West Coast, and then I run from, like, Washington to Alaska. So
oh.
when I get back, I guess I'll have to take it to a shop somewhere and have them take
well,
a peek at it, huh?
I wouldn't wait till you get back. I mean, I'd
yeah,
have somebody.
Be careful
I,
with it. Give it a good listen. Yeah. Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, be careful with it.
Well, it's sitting. I mean, it's sitting in Washington. It's
oh,
not
okay.
even running.
Oh, yeah. When
I'm
yeah, as long as you're
truck,
like,
so when I'm
yeah. Well,
gotcha. Okay.
Good luck with that one. You know, one good thing, guys. Here is a great reason why you should be oil sampling.
That's right.
Without the sample, you wouldn't know. And John, I'm with you. I think that bearing's probably going to fail.
If something got hot, if you look at the indicators being the oxidation in particular, and the, you know, with a synthetic blend is actually going to be more resistant to oxidation than a mineral oil. Yeah. And if it's that hot, that's a serious red flag. What color do they have it flagged?
It was a level 4, the most severe.
Was it? Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
That's,
yeah.
there's a, something,
and the
something
level...
got red hot in there and failed.
The level 4 was from the lead being over 200.
Okay.
All right.
That
let's
engine,
go. Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
That engine's a prime candidate for a Dorothy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
All those
ISXs
are. Yep.
Completely agree on that one. Let's Let's go look at a little better oil sample than that one. Mark in Texas, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. Good afternoon, Bruce, Ethan, and John. Let me give you a little history on this vehicle. Bought it used this year. Bone stock, 2014 T680 with a 13 ISX 15. That first oil sample is still bone stock. It was Shell Rotella T4 oil. And then in July, at that oil change, I changed to the synthetic. I went with Fleet Air Filter, OPS, Fast Power Remote Tune. Prior to everything, I didn't have any issues whatsoever as far as codes coming up or anything like that. After all of this, I started getting codes, came back, had the remote look at it, and they said to replace pressure sensor, manifold pressure sensor, temp sensor, which we did. Still had the problem after that. Stopped by Pittsburgh Power. They looked at it. Same thing. MAP sensor, temp sensor, they said was bad. Said it's common for those to go out regularly. Been driving it a few months. They also recommended a wiring harness, which we haven't done. The problem happens when under load, trying to climb a hill or anything like that, and if the RPMs fall to a certain range, I'll get a D-rate. And it, oddly enough, it never D-rates, even if I go the full duration. It never actually derates. It gives me the code and that's it. And then you shut the truck off for a while, it goes away, everything's fine. But it'll happen just about every single time under a load if I let the RPMs drop below 1400. And as far as the oil sample, I don't know if I should be concerned about the iron and chromium or not.
Let me address that real quick, because that one might be fairly simple, and then I'll let the guys talk about the other issues. How long has the Fleet Air Filter been in there prior to this sample?
Okay. When I did the oil change, I did everything at one time. So that Fleet Air Filter.
So back in July?
Was put on at the oil. Yeah, at the oil change, and I've actually cleaned it one time since then.
That's what I was wondering. I have a feeling you didn't get enough oil on it, or you didn't get it completely oiled the way it should be. The silicon jumped up to 14. That's not horrible, but any time we see silicon go over 10, you can start to get excessive wear metals. Silicon is extremely abrasive. And your iron did jump up almost double what it should have been. So I would get
triple, over triple on the iron and chromium.
I mean double what I would like to see it. At 26,000 miles on the oil, the iron was at 26. That wouldn't be a big deal. You're at 46. So that's kind of what I was referring to. Hold that thought. We'll come back and we'll talk about that and more right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour.
and what?
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're going to go back to Mark in Texas. So, Mark, I'll finish up, and then I'll let those guys address. I would inspect the air filter, the intake, make sure the seal is matching properly, make sure the wraps don't have any tears and they're on correctly, and I would re-oil it. The silicon isn't horrible, but it's starting to climb, and I'm pretty sure that's what is causing the wear metals on this.
Okay, yeah. Now, a quick question. The fleet filters from the factory, they're pre-oiled. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's why I asked you if you had, because I really have never seen
one. No, and I bought another wrap, and I oiled the heck out of it, and I changed it about a month ago.
Then you might want to you might want to really inspect the intake for some other problem. Then we're getting dirt in this engine from somewhere.
Okay, all right. And everything else looks good on the oil sample.
Yeah, oil sample looks great. I mean, other than that, and those two were, you know, the silicon's a little high, and we have wear metals. Those two, that makes sense. So, but everything else looks great.
Right.
The engine is running really well. I mean, we don't have any fuel dilution. We have very, very low soot. The engine is running and performing really well. We're just getting some dirt in somewhere.
Right, right. Okay.
What is the silicon number?
It's 14, Bruce.
14?
Ethan's familiar with this truck, and he wants to say something.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact code. You'd have to refresh my memory on that. But I do remember that I have
one of the codes was 102. And the code that's coming up now is 325.
Yeah, and I have the wiring harness for your truck here, if my memory serves me right, still sitting on the shelf over in the parts department.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the one for the DPF can. It runs between the SDR, the DPF, and the module back there. And they heat soak. And you can sit there, and it's one of the interesting things I've come across. You can multimeter it out, ohm the wires out, check to see if you can see the problem, and especially when they're intermittent. We've seen this a lot, and you won't see the problem with the multimeter.
I wouldn't call the problem intermittent because it does it under a load climbing a hill when the RPMs drop. If I'm in 13th, start going up a hill, if I let the RPMs, you know, drop below 14, it'll set that code off the D rate, and you know, or if I'm making a long pull or something, it'll do it as well. But I mean, it's consistent in that manner. I mean, it's not, it won't ever do it just driving around with no load. It's always when I go to make a pull, like clockwork.
It also happens to be when the wiring harness is getting heat soaked the most.
Well, it could be. Does it do this irregardless of altitude? Do you have to be above a certain altitude before it has the problem, or is it consistent with the load regardless of altitude?
Regardless of altitude. I've done it
okay.
In Colorado. I've done it in Texas.
I got you.
I'm at.
Yep. Well, we might have to.
But it runs great.
Yeah.
It runs great, though, I'll tell you that.
Until you get to the D rate,
even at the D rate, like I said, it never actually D rates. I was under a load and it went to D rate, and it went to 3 hours, it went to 2 hours, it went to 1 hour, it went to 15 minutes, and I was like, I gotta go, you know, I'm just gonna, if I break down, I break down, and it finally went to zero and it did not D rate. I just kept going. I mean, no loss of anything. It never actually derated, but it threw up those codes 102 and 325. And I mean, there's like 125 count of the code 325, and it was in excess of 100 on the code 102 as well.
Well,
and
let us know when you can get in here. Let's get that wiring harness changed and then clear these codes and see what's going on.
Okay, so you still think the harness is a culprit? I mean,
it very well could be. That's what my memory's telling me there. Afterwards, I wrote down what the codes are. I'll be able to go look them up.
Okay.
All right, well,
I will work my way towards you all here in the next couple of weeks, and we'll see if we can't figure it out.
All right.
Thank you.
I've got a, I want to run something by you. So the pictures you guys sent me of the DD5 piston, I posted them on Facebook. I want to read you this response because this guy obviously can see a whole lot more than I can in the pictures. It says, in response to these pictures, looks like the cylinder was already having issues due to injection problems anyway. Then a wrist pin. Imagine an injector failing or a wire harness failure. That is hell on a cylinder in the first place. That alone can cause damage to a cylinder by dry firing, hence the cross-hatching almost gone on this liner. Does that comment make much sense at all? Seems like he's all over the place.
Well, why would dry firing take the cross-hatch off? But we know that this, the way this is broken is a result of the fast timing. Now, it did run a couple hundred thousand miles with the fast timing. So it wasn't an immediate failure.
Right, right.
Two wires coming together and the injector gets the signal at the wrong time and it fires? Yeah, that could be too. Did we ever see that, Ethan, on a DDEC 5?
In this case, there was no codes for any wiring issues on the ECM because the ECMs are very sensitive to like a wiring issue on any of the new engines. So anytime that the wires would short together or open circuit, the ECM most of the time will shut that cylinder off anyway, especially if it thinks it's in a dangerous condition.
Got it. All right.
Those
hey, I just thought that
clear
comment,
that you can see.
Well, that's what I thought. I couldn't see all that. Seems to me like he was reading a lot into that issue.
And it is a high mileage engine, so.
Well, yeah. So you would expect
could very well be worn, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll have to take a closer look at that picture. Maybe he was able to magnify it enough that he could see that crosshatch. That's good.
Yeah, let's get to another call. Let's go to Texas. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hey, man. How y'all doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a 2012 Freightliner Cascadia. It's got the stretch frame on it. It was set up for flatbed, specialized heavy haul, such. I bought it for $28,000, and I cannot seem to get more than 6 miles to the gallon about that. If I got a trailer on, it doesn't matter if I have 9,000 pounds or 40,000 pounds, I'll get anywhere between 5.3 to 5.5. She'll go uphill like there's nobody's business, and she runs great. It just burns a crap ton of fuel. I got a DD15. It's got 550,000 miles on it, Eaton 13 speed, and at 70 miles an hour, I'm sitting right at 1,500 RPM. Any idea what I can do to get some better fuel economy out of this thing?
How many pound of boost does it take? Is that where you're running? Is it 70?
Yes. I run 70 downhill. I mean, generally speaking, I'll run anywhere between 60, 65 miles an hour. I mean, I'm not in that big a rush to get there.
Okay. On the level, how many pound of boost is it taking?
About 9.
That's good. What weight rear ends do you have? Are they 46,000, 40,000?
They're 40,000 pound rear ends.
40,000?
Yeah.
And your gear ratio is?
That I don't know. What I can tell you is I'm running 22 fives. If you know how to figure that out.
What's the history on this truck? How long have you had it?
I've had it for about 11 months or so. I'm the third owner.
has the fuel economy been this bad since you've had it?
Yes. Now, I was thinking it might have had something to do with the last guy because he was a specialized heavy haul driver. That's what he did. So I was thinking maybe that this thing was...
Let me get to a break. We'll come right back. We'll try to dive into this one a little deeper. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get to the phone calls. We were talking with, Thomas in Texas. There he is, Thomas. Let's try to figure out some gear ratios on this thing. When you are going 70, since we started on that number, what is the RPM?
It's dead on 1500. I mean, without a digital tack, I can't tell you precisely, but that needle is floating right over the 1500.
That's fine. That's not a gearing problem then. I mean, the gearing may not be absolutely what we'd like to see, but it's certainly not enough to cause this kind of fuel economy. Do you track every tank?
I do.
Okay.
Even on the weeks when I don't, like, say I have some downtime and I end up idling, my fuel economy only drops like 3 to 4 tenths on the tank.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
you know,
it's not
idling,
that bad.
You hardly ever hear me talk about idling these days. A lot of these engines idle so efficiently that the idle hardly impacts the overall fuel economy. So I don't see that as the problem either. What you threw out a couple numbers. What would you say a true 30-day average on the fuel economy is?
About 5.9, 5.8, somewhere in there.
Yeah. You know, I don't think we're going to come up with anything really obvious on the phone. I think this is one you're going to have to get it in and just start looking at stuff. Anybody else?
I have replaced the motor harness and the EGR valve and the EGR valve cooler. I've replaced all three of those. And that helped because when I first got the truck, it was going like 4.7. I might get 5.6 bobtailed. And then I replaced all that and it came up, you know, to where I was running at 5 point-ish and then bobtailing a little over 6.
How many miles are on it right now?
550,964 flat.
Are you doing any oil analysis?
Not yet. I've been wanting to find out how I can send an oil analysis off. And more importantly, who do I trust? Because, I mean, there's so many different places, and just about all of them have those tabletop analyzers. And I remember the show you did not too long ago saying if they have a bench top, don't trust it.
Yeah, don't even do it. Do you trust me?
Right. I do. I listen to you every chance I get.
Yeah.
sometimes my schedule doesn't let me because I'm sleeping, but, you know.
You can buy the oil sample right in our store. That's the Polaris Lab, the lab that we partner with and use. We absolutely believe in the quality of their results. We've been working with them for years. So you just buy the sample, kit, take it, mail it back. And then when you call in, then we have the results right here. You don't even have to do anything. That's why you hear us reading the oil sample result. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So you just send it in and then you call. And when you call back, Lisa or Bridget, whoever is call screening, just pulls up the records for me and we'll go over the sample. Okay. Here's what I think. I'll let you know if you guys have anything else. I think this is a truck we just need to start at the beginning. Make sure the overhead's set right. Make sure we don't have a charger cooler leaking. Look at an oil sample to see if we've got, you know, fuel or soot or something that looks like it's really out of tune. And then I think we just go through the truck, fix anything that could be a problem causing this, and then look at some modifications and some tweaks. I don't see any reason why if we just start from the beginning and work through that process, we couldn't get this up to a 7.5 mile per gallon truck.
One other thing on the, would like to see it put on a dyno and actually run and see what the horsepower is. He had mentioned that
468.
Okay, it's so you have had it on the dyno.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did when I got it to see if I had any serious powertrain issues. Because the truck I had before this had a transmission problem, and the guy told me if I dynoed it then the power to the ground wouldn't have been anywhere near what it was supposed to be, and I'd have known immediately there was a drivetrain issue. So when I got this one, first thing I did was went and had it dynoed after I had it be serviced.
Okay, that also kind of narrows down the possibility that the previous owner has had the ECM program by somebody, and just to make sure it wasn't making some sort of massive horsepower.
Right. One other question I had. I remember a segment you did probably about a year ago on HHO generators and how they don't really increase your fuel economy because it just drags down on the alternator. Now, what about the particulates? Could I extend the life of my one box by putting one of these on to get rid of the soot?
Well,
is that it burns it all.
Yeah, well, if their claims were true, we would see increased fuel economy. I've never tested for particulates. I've tested many, many times for fuel economy. We see virtually no change. I don't think it's worth the cost of these to begin with if that's what we're trying to do is get soot out. And the Dorothy would be a far better option.
What's a Dorothy?
That's our soot separator that goes in the EGR. So we eliminate some of the soot from the EGR flow before it goes into the engine, and thus we eliminate some on its way down to the one box as well. So
that's like the soot trap on the that aftermarket soot trap for the ISX.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That works great on a DD15 or what engine was yours again?
Yeah, it's a DD15.
DD15, right? Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, it works great on the DD15 as well. Yep. Yeah, actually, it's an easier installation as well on the DD15.
And what would one of those set me back, more or less?
I haven't got the price on the installation kit for that yet. The installation kit itself will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $400. And the Dorothy, the unit itself, the separator, is another $925. So we're $925 for the separator, and then we're about $400 for the installation. So you should be done, with everything for under $1,500 if you come here and have it installed. I'm not ready to ship those kits yet. We're missing and being that far along with it, but we don't have kits ready to mail out just yet. We're still building jigs and kind of onesie twosies here. Every time we get one in, it's a different application, so it's a little different each time we do it. So, but if you want to bring it in, it's a pretty easy installation on the DD15 and. We've seen some trucks have had better results than others. We're not, some of the new ones are running pretty clean on their own. It seems that once they get a few miles on them is when they really start making a difference. We'll fill the canister up on the bottom of a 500,000 mile ISX in about 25,000 miles. So,
Wow.
You know, but you'll see a whole lot cleaner. Your oil samples will be much cleaner. You'll have less soot in the oil samples. You have less soot making its way into the intake. And the cleaner CO2 seems to affect combustion as well. So you get benefits of the clean CO2 in the EGR to help clean up the emissions as well. So you'll see fewer regens, and it'll be a little easier on your one box.
Okay. And go ahead.
There's a 30% decrease in DEF fluid consumption.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, because I run through a tank of DEF on this thing about every 2 days, 2-3 days.
And that would extend that another day or two.
Okay. And do y'all have any input on the Lucas diesel deep plane? I've heard great stuff about it, and I heard a couple of guys say it trashed their regen system. So before I went and got any of it, I figured I'd call and ask.
We haven't tried it, but the last time I worked a seminar with Forrest Lucas, he told me that if he can't make the very best of a product, he won't make it at all. So I don't think he would make something that would hurt it. He has his own fleet of trucks, and I'm sure they've tested it on his own trucks. So I would be careful of the naysayers on that and go with what Lucas says.
You know, Bruce, here's another thing on that comment. And this just applies to a lot of things. One guy puts something in the truck, does something to the truck, and then a week later, a day later, an hour later, a problem occurs. It's human nature to try to connect the two. But do you know, I'm talking to the rest of the people, how much testing and research you would have to do to know that that was the reason your regen system was trashed? I mean, it would take a whole lot more digging to know for sure. I'm 99% positive it wasn't that. And I'm not even a big additive fan. People know that from me. But I'm pretty sure that wasn't what trashed the regen system. That's all the time we've got for this show. We will do it again real soon. See you next time. Thanks for joining me. This is the Power Hour. Thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we are going to get started on a second hour here. Let me see, because I think we lost Ethan and John somewhere. Let me see if we can get them back before we get started. Let me see. Hey, Bruce, before we get started, do you know what happened to Ethan and John?
Ethan just said, are you back on, Ethan? They're on.
Okay, let me find. Oh, there they are. All right.
She's connecting them right now.
Yep, I see them. We'll get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. Engines, performance, fuel mileage, horsepower, torque, troubleshooting, electronics, emissions, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. I'm going to bring the guys back in with me. Bruce, Ethan, John, welcome back, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. So some interesting calls on our last show. I don't know if we have anything we want to start with, anything we want to wrap up, or do we want to get some phone calls?
In the fellow with the poor fuel mileage on the DD15, it would really be to his advantage to get that in here. Let's get it on a dyno and let Ethan look at what's going on with that truck and getting a Dorothy on there.
Yeah, I agree. This truck needs to, we just need to start from scratch on this. You know, do an oil sample, check right. The overhead, test the charger, cooler, get it on the dyno. I'm sure we'll find a couple things that could be fixed. And then it might just be a matter of tweaking and some modifications.
You know, there's everybody uses the term, I had heavy haul programs put in my ECM. Well, this truck was a heavy haul truck, and maybe people had been in there. He is the third owner of it, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And so maybe we need to take it back to stock and then work up from there.
Good point. All right. Let's, we've got all kinds of questions on the line today, so let's get right to it. We are, we're going to start off in Arkansas. Ronnie, welcome to the program.
Hey guys. I called y'all a couple of weeks ago, talking about the glider or emissions truck. And, I think it was Ethan that said something about, and which really made me think about getting a, leaning more towards a glider. But now my question is, if I go into a builder who builds gliders and say, hey, I want everything y'all have but your engine, and I want Pittsburgh Power to build the engine, are they going to frown upon this, or have y'all done this before? And then what is the process when I get ready to go? Do I need to talk to both parties, the builder and y'all, of course, Pittsburgh, or they're going to do, the builder will call y'all? And what will you get? When you, if you build an engine, is it, you're going to be able to, would I be able to get an engine? Like I want 550 horse to the ground, and will y'all program the engine too with the ECM come with it? Can you kind of explain a little bit how that would work if you've done it before?
Yes, we have done it before. Yes, the ECM will come with it. Yes, it will be set at the horsepower that you want. It will be a signature engine. Yes, we have a guy out on Route 22 east of us that can build the truck in 1 week. He's set up as an assembly line, and there is absolutely no problems.
Okay. And what I'm looking at is the 579P. Is that, would that be an issue, or does that guy build the 579 also, or?
Does Peterbilt offer the 579 as a glider?
Well, there's only one of them that I know that does. That's why I'm wondering if it would be an issue.
I mean, does Peterbilt offer the 579?
Right. As long as Peterbilt offers it as a kit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know, like I said, I've only known one that's Vince Gerald that offers the 579. I mean, I haven't got that deep into it, but I know they offer it. I don't know if they would frown if I told them, hey, I want y'all's truck, but I want Pittsburgh's engine. And if, do y'all do the warranty on the engine, or is it just, or how would that work?
We do the warranty on it, and then you have the warranty if it's Caterpillar on Caterpillar's parts, Detroit and Cummins, you have their warranty. If you want to do it with Fitzgerald, let me know first, and I'll give Tommy Sr. call, and he and I'll talk about it.
Okay.
I just spoke to him 2 days ago. I don't think there's any problems. But think about this fellow that we have that's been building them for us. He does a great job, and he's about 2 hours from us, and that would be another good source. Our shop's been very busy, so it's almost impossible for us to build one now.
Oh, it wouldn't be now. I mean, I have a truck now running, so, but definitely want y'all's engine. And that's, y'all pretty much answered everything as far as the ECM and all that coming with it. That's great.
What's your engine of choice?
The Detroit. It would be the Detroit okay. 60 series.
The 12.7 or the 14?
The 12.7.
All right. And what do you haul and what territory do you mostly run?
I'll run all the way from Texas to Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania to Minnesota, Minnesota back down to Texas, 80,000
okay.
dry van.
Okay, that's a good choice. But whenever you get closer to it, let's talk about the gentleman that we have just east of us here.
So it'd be a good idea to call y'all first and
yes,
and get that going. Okay. All right. Sounds good. I appreciate it, guys.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We're going to head off to Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you guys for taking my call. I have some questions. I'm looking at a 1996 Freightliner cab owner.
Yeah, I see that.
I want to know, I got some pros and cons about it. It's a single axle. It's got N14 with 477,000 miles on it. It's N14 Plus with an Eaton 10 speed. They only want 4,500 for it, and it's in rough condition. I got it has a low pressure light on. The voltage gauge doesn't work, or it's not staying charged. I'm not sure which one. It's a single axle. Marker lights don't work on it. Rear seal is blown on the passenger side, and one of the tanks
has
a slow leak.
Hold on. Hold on. Let's not go through all that little stuff, because that you could find that kind of stuff on a brand new truck. That's all really, really minor stuff. Let's look at the big
okay.
picture first. What are you going to do with this truck?
That would be my other question. I had an option. They also have a little 28-foot pup with a lift gate and a reefer for sale also. They said they'd sell the whole thing for $75.
Wait.
But I'm not
stop.
Sure if I were to
stop.
Go into something like that or not.
Stop, because I want to – there was a reason I asked that question. What are you planning on doing as a business before we looked at the truck? What kind of operation are you trying to run?
I don't have that part figured out yet. I'm just looking at a truck. I'm a company driver now.
Don't look at trucks first. That's completely backwards. The two trucks you just mentioned to me, I'm not sure what the hell I would go do with either one of them. Now, had you told me, I run a lightweight, drop or a flatbed, and I'm going to haul campers or, I've already got this contract. Well, then that single axle cab over could make sense. But to buy a truck like that, that has such a limited use, would be insane. There's very little you're going to do in the industry with that truck. The other truck, other than expediting, I have no idea what you would do with that one. So you've got the trailer in front of the truck or the cart in front of the horse. You need to design your business first. This
okay.
is a mistake I see all the time. People like trucks, so they go out and they buy a truck, and then they look around and go, okay, what do I do now? Well, you got to
right.
design your business first. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm feeling really generous today. I have a program that I wrote that helps people get started in the industry. Because honestly, right now, you're not even to the point where you're asking good questions yet. So there's not a whole lot I can help you with other than saying, stop what you're doing. Don't buy a truck. Don't spend any money. The program that I wrote, it's a physical program. It's got video you can listen or watch. It's got audio you can listen to while you're driving. It's got workbooks. It's got check sheets. We normally charge $250 for this program, and it's worth 10 times that. We sell a ton of them. I'm going to give you one today.
Oh, thank you.
You need
That's
to go
fantastic.
Through this program. When you are done with the program, you will then have better questions and we can get started. We're not even to the point where I could really help you get started yet. So I'm glad you called. That was a good thing. And I'm glad you asked the wrong question, because now it's got us on the right track. So I'm going to put you back on hold. I'll have Bridget pick up. We'll get your information. We'll get that program sent right out to you. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. We are off to Arizona. Leo, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I have a question on the thermostats. I ordered the thermostat from Pittsburgh Power for a Detroit Series 60, the 12.7 liter. What should the normal temperature be on those, since it's looking off on mine now?
All right, it takes 16 degrees to fully open a thermostat. So if it's a 180, it fully opens at 196. If it's a 190, it fully opens at 206. So what temperature range did you ask for?
It's supposed to be the one for 180.
Okay.
I don't know who
and
I
what's your temperature running,
you guys, but well, at nighttime between 84 and 94 degrees on the outside temperature, I've been running about 127 to 152 degrees. At idle in daytime it's 78 to 91 degrees. I'm running 112 to 125 at idle. They told me to change the possibly the sensor because that could be off, which I did. But it's the only difference between that one and the old one that I changed is that I don't see the temperature fluctuating from real high to low. It basically, you know, stays in that range.
Did you put a new seal in it that the thermostat rides in?
Yes.
And is the seal in straight?
As a matter of fact, that's a good question. I guess that's what I was going to ask, if somehow I might have done something wrong when I put those thermostats in there. Because the first time that I did it, I ended up with a small leak at the thermostat housing. And I ended up taking it apart again, and I made sure it was clean again. And I actually put a small bead of that gasket maker, and I don't have that problem anymore. So,
but there's a seal that sits down inside. There's a seal that sits down inside the thermostat housing, and something's telling me that seal is not in there, or it got knocked out of place. That's what I'm thinking is going on, because you are running way too cold.
Yeah.
So
how would I go about getting just those seals? Do I have to buy the whole thermostats again?
You could probably stop at Freightliner or Detroit and just pick up a thermostat seal. I'd get a couple of them because they can be a little touchy getting into the right spot. And years ago, if you didn't have the installing tool, I saw people use an aerosol can, like a spray can for paint. And I think that was about the same diameter of that seal. And they were using that to drive it in. Here we have a regular seal installer that we use.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I wasn't told that I needed some kind of special tool on that, as far as that goes. So that does have to sit first on that rim, the seal. And then you put the thermostat on top of that. Okay.
Right.
And does the thermostat itself go through that, eventually go through that seal, or does it just sit on top of that ring seal?
No, it goes through it, and that seal rides on the thermostat.
Yeah, because the second time I did it, I actually put that seal through the on the thermostat, and then I dropped it in there.
Oh, no, that won't do that. You can't get the seal in then. That's the problem.
Okay.
Your seal's not down against the lip. What I want you to do is call here. You have our phone number, and ask for Brian. He's the shop foreman.
Okay.
And Brian can tell him I told you to call. I'm Bruce. And if you wait till after the show, I'll tell him that you're going to be calling, and he'll tell you how to drive that seal into place.
All right.
You might have to stop and pick up a new seal, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
Okay. You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to New York. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brooks. Yeah, Kevin, yep. What's up? Got a question for you guys. I got a 1996 FLD with two 280 rears, and I got a 10-speed transmission in there. Well, I want to go, right now I'm running heavy and fast, and I want to do a little bit better in the hills.
Okay.
That go, transmission is getting ready to go. I was looking at an 18-speed. Would that work with my rears?
Well, it will.
That'll
but
work
I,
with
I,
you.
Okay. What kind of operation? Is this
Kevin,
normal 80,000 pounds and under?
Yeah, yes.
All right. The first thing to do, the rear ends aren't the problem, and the transmission's not the problem. Whether you go to a 10 direct or you go to a double over 18 or 13, with that rear, you're going to basically be running in direct gear. But we need to give the engine some performance. We need to look at the manifold and the turbo and the ECM programming or the power box. And let's bring the horsepower up to into the 600s on the engine, and then your problem is solved. So it's not a gearing issue. It's a low power out of the engine.
Yeah, you've actually got good gears. This is what we recommend. But if the transmission was fine, I would say leave your 10-speed alone. If it's failing, then this is a great time. I would go to a 13 on anything under 80,000 pounds, normal weights, not true heavy haul. I just don't see the need for an 18. They're heavier. They're expensive. You're almost never going to split the gears in the bottom end. And even on a 13-speed, when you've got enough horsepower, which is what Bruce is talking about, really about the only gears you end up splitting are the last couple. Now, with a 13-speed, you're going to end up running this truck in 11th most of the time. That's your direct gear. You would have 12th as a really nice overdrive, and 13th would be almost useless. But that would give the best ability to split a gear when you want to, and the best fuel economy and the best performance. And with the horsepower upgrade, you'll feel like you're in a new truck.
Okay. All right. Then I'm gonna look in. So I should keep, because this 10 speed is fairly cheap to rebuild. It's a Rockwell, like.
No,
I like it, you know?
A lot of trucks with 10 speeds. That 13 gives you a little more flexibility, but with the kind of performance Bruce can get out of an engine, it's not always critical to have that half a gear to split. If you've got enough horsepower and torque, you know, a 10 speed might be a great transmission in this.
If you like the 10 speed and it's economical to build, rebuild your 10 speed. Get the truck over to our shop and let's make it run right.
All right. I've been delaying with that.
Your gearing's excellent. This is the kind of gearing we actually recommend. So the only question really is, you know, you could save some money just rebuilding your 10 speed, then you know what you have. It's nice to have a 13. And if we absolutely had to replace the transmission, I'd say, get a 13. But rebuilding your own, you know what you have. You're not buying a used transmission. So you could save yourself some money, take the money you saved, put it into the performance upgrades. You'll hardly miss the 13 speed with those kind of performance upgrades, and you're going to get much better fuel economy.
All right. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I got to come see them and rebuild my tent. Look, I like it.
There you go.
All right.
Nice. Sometimes the best solution is the simple solution. So we like that. Let's, there they are. They're back. All right, guys, we lost you again. I see you now. Welcome back.
Thanks, John Kevin. That may happen again for some reason. You got us? Hello?
Yep.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good. if we drop out again, we're talking to you via the internet with Skype. So if our internet goes down, you lose us. And for some reason,
yeah. Okay. You know, I love the voice over IP Skype kind of stuff when we do this, because the quality is better. I mean, you get a much better sound quality. But sometimes you got to deal. We've been dealing with the internet problems out here since the fire, so hopefully they're going to get better. There's the music. I've got to get to a break. We will come right back in just a minute with more stuff. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Hey, John, I know you like all these kind of technology gadgets. Speaking of voice over IP and quality, I'm looking at a box to go in my studio right now. It's a couple $1,000s, but I wire it into my audio here in the studio, and then it generates a link. I could send that link to you. You open the link on your smartphone, and it creates a voice over IP connection back into my studio.
Gone.
We're gone again.
Oh, there goes technology speech.
Oh, wait.
John, Ethan, we can,
you there?
Yeah, we can hear you guys. John?
Nope.
Ethan? No. All right. We're going to have to cut them off. Oh, let's try that again. John, Ethan?
You got us?
Yeah.
We're back.
Yeah, we've been able to hear you.
We okay.
Okay.
Yeah, you dropped us, sir. We couldn't hear you. Went blank on our end while we were talking about the wonderful technology now.
All right. So you probably didn't hear me talk about the technology piece just now.
You have a little box you're going to attach to your studio there that
yeah.
I'll get a link to my smart device and be able to connect to somehow.
Yeah, and the connection is voice over IP, so it's a really high. It's not a phone connection, so you don't get that phone sound. You get a really nice, you know, and a lot of the smartphones, you can plug in a pretty decent mic right to the phone these days, and you can almost get studio quality from a phone. All right, I'm gonna have to cut you guys loose. Bruce, looks like it's you and I to finish things up.
Okay. Why don't we have Bridget call these guys on their cell phone?
We could probably do that. Let me, let me see if she's listening. She probably is. She's not on the phone. Bridget, if you could, try to call John and Ethan on the cell phone. We've got to get back to some calls because we are here live here. We're going to go to Texas. Victor, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What can we help you with today?
I picked up a Schneider glider at the beginning of 2015, and I've been having some wonky electric problems with it, and nobody wants to touch electronics in the truck because it's hard to chase it out. I understand there's 10 million wires in the truck. Sometimes it runs nice and clean for me, but then when it starts to act up, I see some of my cab lights will be dim. I'll see a short where when my turn signals are on, my dome light will dim when they flash. I have stuff like one of my headlight connectors wants to get real hot and melt. The harness going into my air conditioning unit, the dryer there, that'll get real hot and melt. And they put a new switch on, they put a new harness on, but it's not addressing the underlying problem of what's back feeding into my chassis, what's back feeding into my dash controls. And I'm wondering, can Pittsburgh Power help me out here? What would it cost to get somebody into this truck and figure out, you know, what why am I getting wonky electronics on all my accessories?
Oh, you're not, you can't hear? But you can't talk? All right, you heard it. Here.
Did you guys hear me?
Hey. Yep, Bruce handed me a cell phone here. It's going to be something that we're going to have to, you know, sit down and take a thorough look over.
Sure.
Check to make sure that everything is correct, all the start basics, make sure everything's grounded correctly, that you're not getting a ground that's jumping in and out, because that can cause a lot of funny things to happen.
I suspect that's what's happening is it's very intermittent. It doesn't do it all the time, but it does it very often, and it's getting worse and worse. I'm finding more systems affected.
Yeah, and one thing you can do before you even bring it here is, you know, go to a local auto parts store and get yourself some heavy duty cable, you know, wire, some sort of like battery cable, and put a ground from your battery to your chassis, and then from your chassis to your cab. This way, you know that everything is grounded to the one central ground.
Okay.
And then that's something that you can do on your own there, just to see if that helps out a lot. You can even inspect all your grounds too, and, you know, give them a little tug. Remember, they're bouncing up and down the road, so you don't have to just pull on them lightly, but don't yank on them.
Okay, yeah, I have a friend telling me, you know, get your grounds cleaned. That'd be the first step, and I understand that. But I have a suspicion that this is going through my dashboard somewhere, because it's all the systems that have got a switch or a knob on the dash.
Yeah, and if you're not getting a good ground from the chassis to your, you know, to the frame, from the cab to the chassis there, it can cause all kind of funny things to happen. We've had that happen where the wire falls off in the shop, and all of a sudden all the gauges are doing all kinds of stuff.
I've had that happen too. I one particular day where my gauges just all went blank. The truck ran fine. It doesn't actually interrupt the engine operation at all. And that was like one day in 3 years. But like I said, I can't put my finger on it. I'm not mechanically inclined. But nobody wants to seem to take care of it for, you know, address it.
Yeah, and it's hard to give you a time frame on that, being that it can go many different directions.
Does it help if I add a little anecdote? I was talking to a guy from Maverick, and they used to run a bunch of these Columbias out of Little Rock. And he told me that the thing is a little susceptible to some water coming down and getting into the panel on the left side by the, I guess there's a big relay next to the, So but like I said, I looked in there. I didn't see any sign of arcing or shorting. But again, I wasn't going to fool with it, not be, you know, and end up with a truck that didn't run at all because I thought I'd be ambitious.
Yeah, you could take a look in there. You may not see arcing, but you're looking for a lot of that awesome green corrosion that forms whenever you put water and electric together. So keep an eye out for that. But, yeah, it would have to be something. The windshield, make sure it's sealed. We see lots of trucks in here that the water is getting past the windshield.
Curiously enough, I didn't have the greatest seal, and I just got two new windshields last week. So I'm hoping that's going to... If that was a contributing factor, that'll be taken care of at least. Can I ask you one more question on another topic?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. To do the Pittsburgh Power Tune, does that come with a lifetime reinstall with the, you know, if I take this to a Freightliner somewhere and they decide to mess with my ECM, can I come back and get it reprogrammed correctly if we want to call the Pittsburgh system correct?
We typically, at most, we will charge an hour labor because I back it all up here. So, you know, at worst, it'll be an hour's labor to put it back in.
Okay. Because it's a fairly pricey, what you charge for your license, right? It's about $1,500.
What engine do you have there? I missed that part when my headset was not working there.
Oh, sorry. It's a 12.7 Detroit and a Schneider glider.
Yeah, we started, it's 1450 for the tune. And then, you know, we see that a lot where you go in because, you know, sometimes you break down along the road, you have to go there. Even if you tell them don't touch it, they do it anyway sometimes. So, yeah, it'll be at worst there an hour labor.
All right. Sounds like a winner. Let's head off to Ohio. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin, Mr. Positive. Before we get to my question, before we get to my technical question, I got a couple of thoughts that I'm really positive about today. Last night, I am positive that I wasted 7 minutes of my time watching a guy in a cowboy hat make a video that I thought was the most full of manure person I've ever heard of. Go ahead. Well, I'm just real positive that showed me and confirmed that you and Lisa are the genuine article, are a real class act, and it shows in your dedication to us individuals, and your stamp is wonderful beyond compare. And I just wanted to express my admiration, appreciation, and support for you and what you and your staff does.
Well, thank you. You know, I realize I'm extremely opinionated. It's why I don't typically get involved with groups. I really don't play well with others. I get that. I know that about myself. So I don't try anymore. I don't try to work in groups or committees because I get frustrated. But I love debate when it's open and honest, and we don't do the name calling and the, so we invited the guy on the show. The first interaction, before I even knew who he was, he went off on social media about how I trashed him and I was afraid to have him on the show. I didn't even know who the guy was. So we reached out and said, look, you want to come on the show and talk about this? Come on. We gave him multiple invitations. We even said we would do a special recording to fit his schedule. And that video was his response. So clearly he's too busy changing the industry to come talk to me. There's the music. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come right back and get to more of your calls right after this. And Joe, we're coming right back to you, so don't go anywhere. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power with me. We're going to get right back to your phone calls. We are off to Ohio. Joe, go ahead.
Okay. I'll start with what I need is a baseline of information. How often should the air dryer purge itself on a normal operation if everything's working right?
It purges itself, you know, when it's at pressure. So you've got to start looking at a lot of things. You got to start looking at the air dryer itself, the governor, the compressor. I mean, just in general, I'll let, who do we have on from Pittsburgh Power right now? I know we're having some technical issues.
Bruce,
did you hear the question on the air dryer? Sounds like he's got one. Purging too often.
Right. And you hear them purging, and
you know when it is too often because it keeps doing it every time the air compressor cycles, and it's not supposed to do that. But I am not an expert on that field, so I would have to refer him to somebody at Bendix.
I don't know if I would go by a time. If you feel like that it's purging too often, I think I would just inspect the entire system, starting at the compressor, the governor, and the fire.
Okay, we've replaced the governor. It's indicator line, the quarter inch line. It does not leak all the way back to the air dryer. The air dryer was put on shortly after I bought the truck in October. And a few days ago, we also replaced the desiccant canister because it was overdue, I think. Anyway, it still wants to dump air about every 15 to 20 seconds. It's driving me crazy. And I'm still getting a lot of water, even in the supply tanks.
That's too often. Now, I think you may need an entire clean out of the air system. I mean, we might be getting a lot of dirt, oil, moisture, everything. You might want to take, you know, instead of just trying to use the valves to drain the storage tanks, you might want to take the valves out of the storage tanks and inspect them and see what you've got inside.
Okay. And I've heard such as the unloader valves and a purge valve on the dryer. How common is that
people
cause
use
for doing this?
That can be the problem. That's what I say. You got to kind of start at the beginning. So just so we know, people use like at least three different terms. I've heard spitter valve, unloader valve, purge valve. They're all the same thing.
Okay. The what I understand is the purge valve is on the air dryer, and that's what's making the sound and spitting out the impurities in the water. And then the unloader valve is on the top end of the compressor. And I guess that can be worn out or the O-ring screwed up or whatever.
Yeah, almost every time I deal with this, it's one of those problems that has multiple issues that can cause it. And it seems like it's a different one every time we talk about it. So when it becomes a problem like this, I tell people, let's just start at the beginning. Go through the entire air system. Open up the valves on the tanks, literally get inside, look at them, see if we've got a lot of water, dirt, oil, that kind of stuff, clean out the system, and then start at the compressor and inspect all of those parts. Let's go to Tennessee. Alberto, welcome to the program.
Hey there. I was just wondering, how do you go about cleaning the Dorothy once it's full?
Oh, about every 30 to 40,000 miles, there's a clamp you take off. It's a 7/16 nut. You need a 7/16 deep well 3/8 drive socket, and just take the clamp loose and take the bottom cap off and go over the garbage can and dump it out. A lot of the EGR soot that we're getting out, sometimes you'll have to put some solvent in if yours is wet and damp. Most of the time it's very dry, and you just dump it.
Okay, perfect.
And put the canister back up and put the clamp back on, and away you go. You have about 5 minutes in doing it.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. That was a nice, easy one. Let's go to Minnesota. Dwayne, it's your turn. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to comment on the guy that wanted the 579 glider kit. We've bought several of them, and we just order them from Fitzgerald's. They'll order them from the factory, and they'll drop ship them anywhere you want them and have them put together where you want. They don't have to be put together down there.
Ah, perfect.
That's good.
That's, yeah, that's good to know.
Because I don't want anybody.
How have you? Yeah. So how have your 579s been doing? You happy with them?
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Wonderful.
Good.
We have two of them, and they're great.
Good. Glad to hear it. Well, thanks for the heads up on that.
Yep.
All right. right. Take care. Let's see. We boy, we just lost a ton of call. Oh, there's one. They're starting to come back. We've been having some phone issues. I think it's internet on our end again after the fires. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy. After running down my ISX on Sunday, Monday morning, it didn't want to go. I parked in a rest area on Sunday night. In a rest area Sunday night. Monday morning, did my pre-trip, turned the key, and it sounded like it was starving for fuel. And so I hopped out and, you know, key on. I could hear the electric pumping. And so, okay, we got fuel. And it would fire, but it wouldn't keep running. And then it got to the point, I guess it burnt that fuel or whatever, and it wouldn't fire at all. So the mechanic guy came out, and he plugged his computer in. He says, oh, you got a couple of codes. I said, yeah, one's for electrical short in the dash somewhere, and another one for after treatment. And he said, yeah, that's right. And I said, yeah, they've been there forever. And he said, well, neither of them should stop it from cranking over. And he said, but I'll clear them out and see what happens. He cleared them out, turned the key, and it started just good as normal. Yeah. I know I have to go back to Pittsburgh, so.
Okay. Make sure you pass that on to Ethan, but he can hear you, so.
Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll see. See, that's what happens. That's what happens when you talk bad about it on the radio.
I know, yeah, the Cummins gods was looking down at me.
That's right. That's right. They listen to my show, you know.
Yeah. Well, they've heard the complaint.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They know. All right. We're going to try to squeeze in another one. Let's go to Oklahoma. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I talked to Bruce late spring, early summer, about doing a remote tune on a Mercedes engine. And at the time, they could not do it. They didn't have the specs or whatever. I was just wondering if they could do it now or if they know anything more about a Mercedes engine.
Nope. We do not have any specs, any way to get into the ECM on the Mercedes engine. The foreign people are tough to get programs out of, such as Volvo, Mercedes, the Packard engine, even the engineers at Peterbilt can't seem to get the programs out of.
Where's that come from, John? The Packard engine.
Where's it based out? Based out of the Netherlands. It's hard to get those foreign people to give the U.S. people information, passcodes, and ways to get through all the gates and.
I know, Kevin, this is not your favorite engine, and everybody started giving me a complex on this engine, but it seems to, I had it for 2 years now, and I've put over 200,000 miles. It still seems to run pretty good, but it just seems a little lack of horsepower. So,
yeah.
Is it an EGR engine?
Go ahead.
Yes, it's a 2006. Yeah.
Okay. We can do a manifold for you, a ported and ceramic coated manifold. And I think that'll gain you 45 or 50 horsepower.
Okay.
The stock manifold on that is extremely restrictive. They're running cylinders number 4, 5, and 6 through a hole that's a little bit larger than the size of a quarter. And the reason for that is they want to make back pressure in the engine to force it through the EGR system. So your front three cylinders run with good exhaust flow. The back three are choked.
That's going to do it. There's the music. They're going to make me get out of here, so we will see you next time. Thanks to the guys at Pittsburgh Power. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.